Hi, I'm Piper.
And I'm Erin.
And welcome to Off the Tracks podcast, where we explore what it means to do law differently.
We are so excited to be joined by Rebecca Tripp. Rebecca is a licensed paralegal, regulated Canadian immigration consultant, notary public, and she recently opened her own law office. She provides legal outsourcing services along with immigration representation, immigration coaching, and unbundled paralegal services as well. So we are so excited to have you on the show, Rebecca. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
So you are our first guest that is a paralegal and an immigration consultant. So we are super excited to have a different perspective on the podcast and learn more about your career trajectory. But we'd love to start with what led you to become a paralegal and has that changed over time?
Sure. Yeah. So I guess we'll start from the beginning. When I first started my educational journey, I did not have law on my radar at all. So I did a general first year at Fleming College. And one of the courses was sociology. And one of the units was international development studies, which really piqued my interest. So I ended up majoring in it. I double majored in history and international development studies. And in my final year, I took two courses, law, rights and development and global migration. And that's when I found immigration law and I absolutely loved it. So I decided to go to UBC to do the immigration consultant program. And I quickly realized that I knew nothing about the law. I had never met a lawyer before. My parents did not go to university or college. And so the law was just kind of this like foreign concept that, I learned very quickly that I needed to do something or, you know, I wasn't going to be successful in that program. So after the first semester, I decided to change gears and I went to Fleming College for the paralegal program. Really, the only reason I decided on the paralegal program was because they had one course that was immigration law. So I was like, okay, like that will help me not only build my law foundation, but I'll also be able to get a bit of experience with immigration law. So that's kind of how I fell into the paralegal profession. And I'm so happy that I, you know, switched gears when I did, because throughout the program, I decided I wanted to be a licensed paralegal. And then afterwards, I went to Humber College to take the immigration consultant program. So now I'm licensed under two governing bodies, and my business now has the two professions I'm blending together. So they complement each other quite well.
That's so interesting, Rebecca. So I don't live in the world of immigration law like yourself or Erin and like maybe some of our listeners. So I honestly don't really know exactly what an immigration consultant does. Would you mind just telling us a bit more about that role?
Yeah. So I kind of always explain it with the paralegal profession as well, because people will say, well, like, why do you have to be licensed twice? Like, why do you have the two different professions? So I guess I'll start with the paralegal profession and then I'll switch over to the immigration. So with the paralegal licensing, we have a narrow scope of practice and we're able to do anything in a tribunal, small claims, which is under 35,000, provincial offenses and summary offenses. So with that, immigration law isn't part of it, but immigration litigation is within a tribunal, the IRB. So as a paralegal, we are able to do the tribunal part of immigration law, but we're not able to touch the immigration applications. So that's when the immigration consultant profession comes in. So as an immigration consultant, I am able to provide legal advice regarding immigration applications. I'm also able to go to the tribunal as well. So as a paralegal, I wasn't able to do the application process, which is a big part of the industry, is being able to apply for Canadian status. So that's how I landed on becoming licensed under both. And as an immigration consultant and as a paralegal, we're not able to represent clients at the federal level. So that's when you would then need a lawyer in order to help you with your immigration file.
Yeah. Thank you so much for explaining that, Rebecca. I think it's always helpful to understand the different roles that different people play in the system. And I guess one question we have for you is, did you ever consider going to law school where you would have just needed that one degree to do what you do now? And, or was that not really on your radar?
Yeah. You know, I think anyone in the legal industry, law clerks, paralegals, law school is, you know, on their radar. It's a consideration. But for me, again, you know, not meeting any lawyers until I was in the paralegal program, and just not being exposed to the legal industry, it really wasn't on my radar at all. I had some classmates at Trent University that were, you know, getting ready for law school. It never really crossed my mind as something that I wanted to do. And I think a part of that is because the immigration consultant profession really provided me with everything that I wanted to do with my career. I wanted to work with immigrants, trying to get them into Canada. I, you know, really enjoy working in the legal industry, and I enjoy, you know, working on applications and doing oral arguments at tribunals. And so it just, I think the return on investment wasn't really there for me. And while it's still a consideration, and I think it might always be, I haven't found the real reason for me to pull the trigger to do so, because everything that I want to do with my career, I can do it as a paralegal and an immigration consultant.
I really appreciate your answer, because I mean, I'm not a paralegal, but I would assume that this is maybe the first time you haven't been asked that question. And I think that sometimes, like, people think, oh, you couldn't get into law school if you're a paralegal, or you didn't want to hack it, or this was a faster route, or whatever, like, put down condescending thing they want to say about it. And so often, like, paralegals, frankly, in many situations work just as hard, if not harder, than lawyers, and support lawyers if they work in a big firm or have their own practices like you do. And it's like apples and oranges. It doesn't need to be like two types of apples and one is better. Suddenly, like, I'm on a fruit comparison thing. But I just think that that's awesome, because I think it's so important for people to know more about, like, the scope of practice for paralegals and the different ways in which they interact with and help build the legal profession. And so I really appreciate you, like, talking more about your experience in your, like, in both licensing bodies, but especially as a paralegal, because I think it's, I think it's misunderstood.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. A lot of people think that people, like you said, they became a paralegal because they couldn't get into law school, or, you know, they didn't have the grades. And for me, you know, that wasn't a part of the decision process. It was more about, what do I want to do, and how can I do that in a way that fits my career goals the best? And I think we all know that law school is very expensive. And while that's a part of it, it's also a lot of time. And, you know, going through my educational background, I've spent a lot of time in school. And I think that, you know, while I could have done law school, I'm really happy with how I went about my educational journey, because I do really feel like I have a good foundation now. And I'm doing what I want to do, which is the main goal, right? We all just want to be in careers and love what we're doing, and I'm there.
Yeah. So, can we hear a bit more about the different work that you've done in your roles as a paralegal and a consultant? And we know that you now have your own law office, but I'm sure there was quite a journey to get to that point. So if you could just share a bit about the different types of work, we'd love to hear a bit more about that.
Sure. Yeah. So during my undergrad and finding immigration law, I really wanted to go to Toronto and do big law. I was super excited to experience, you know, the traditional law firm. And as a paralegal, we have to complete a placement in order to get licensed. And so I landed a placement in Toronto at an immigration law firm. And from that placement, that internship, I got a full-time job. And so I moved to Toronto. I'm from a small town north of Toronto. So I moved to Toronto and I was there for a total of 1 year. And during that year, I realized it wasn't for me. And I decided to leave. And I think it kind of boiled down to like four reasons why I left. And one was, you know, Toronto and the city, just, it wasn't for me. I'm a small town girl and I'm okay with that. Another reason was that I really saw that there was a ceiling in that position. And if I wanted to move up in my career, I had to become a lawyer, which was, again, just, you know, not part of my career path that I wanted to take. Another element of it, and I think a lot of people in the traditional big law firms can kind of say this, that it's hard to have a say in your caseload and it's hard to really control your hours. And so it includes, you know, long days and long weeks. And, you know, at a point it became overwhelming. And, you know, the last part of it was that I didn't want to niche down. While I love immigration law and I'm still working in immigration law, when you work solely in one area, especially right after graduation, when you just learned all these different areas of law, I didn't want to niche down. And so I decided to leave and I ended up working as an in-house paralegal in my town of Peterborough for a startup. And like, what a 360. Like, it was completely different. Every day was different. I was touching immigration law, employment law, IP, corporate, governance. Like, it had everything under the sun. And I really did enjoy that job. I was there for 3 years and then COVID hit. And I found myself unemployed during my final semester at Humber College when I was doing the immigration consultant program. And so I found myself unemployed. I just finished school and I came across this company called Flex Legal that had freelancing legal professionals. So paralegals, law clerks, and lawyers. And I thought, like, what an interesting, unique company and like career path. Like, I never thought of freelancing as being part of the legal industry. And so I reached out to her and after a few conversations, I was hooked and I started freelancing. So at that time, this is like August, 2020, I started freelancing, but I wasn't an immigration consultant yet. I had finished my program, but I hadn't done the exam yet. So over the course of, you know, August, 2020 to 2021 was the exam and licensing process and getting my accreditation to be able to provide immigration services. So I finally, finalized that July, 2021. And that's when I decided to make another move and rebrand and combine my two professions into one business, which is now the Immigration and Paralegal Law Office of Rebecca B. Tripp. So there I still provide my freelancing services. I call it legal outsourcing now. And then I also provide unbundled paralegal services, immigration representation, as well as immigration coaching. And with immigration coaching, I feel like that's kind of my way of like filling the gap a bit in the legal industry that I've seen over the last few years. So I find, you know, there's a bit of a gap when it comes to people reaching out for support in the legal industry. They either think that you need to hire a lawyer and they will represent you and, you know, more or less take over the case for you. And then on the other side, there's self-representation and people are like, you know what, I'm just going to do it on my own and like cross my fingers and hope for the best. And so I kind of came up with this idea of like immigration coaching, which is people want to self-represent, they have the time and they're interested in like really handling their file on their own, but they just want that extra support. court and they just want that extra set of eyes that has dealt with an immigration file before. So that's actually been one of the services that I'm kind of most excited about is the immigration coaching. So that's where I am now.
I think that that's really wonderful and a true testament to the importance of finding your niche. And one thing that really strikes me when speaking with you, and I mean, I don't really know you that well other than from one conversation we had pre-recording this podcast. But one thing that really, really strikes me when speaking with you is it is so clear that you are passionate about what you do and you love what you do and you're curious and like really excited to like learn more so that you can help more people with additional services. And what's also really interesting from when Erin and I first creeped your website, when we first connected and we went, oh my goodness, Rebecca's website is incredible. Like you really are committed to growing your business, but like growing the ways in which you're able to help people. And it just really, really comes across when you speak and it's awesome. So Rebecca, it's so clear that you've really been able to like pivot and you've had both setbacks and lots of successes. And I think Erin and I are always really interested in the things that have really helped people excel and like been defining moments for them. And then we're also really interested in like some of those lower moments that at the time maybe felt like you couldn't come back from, and then here you are. So we'd love to hear about either or both, kind of like a setback you may have had along the way or a big success that's maybe come from your business or any of the wonderful career moves you've made.
Sure. Yeah. So I think the biggest setback for me was my experience at UBC. I graduated from Trent University and took a semester off and then enrolled right in the program. And I had my eyes on that program for about 2 years. And I was just so excited to get into immigration law. And I mean, I think it was within the first week. I was like, I literally don't know. I do not know what I'm doing right now. And that was the first time that I had really felt uncomfortable in a classroom. I love school. I loved university. I really enjoyed all my classes. And then UBC came along and I just felt like I had been knocked off my feet. And so, you know, I struggled through that semester and I'm not one to just kind of, you know, woe is me. I'm going to drop out, give up immigration law. Obviously it's not for me and try to pivot in a different direction. I was really determined to succeed in immigration law. And so dropping out was a really hard decision for me. And I think before I dropped out, I had enrolled in the paralegal program. So I had my next move ready to go before I even made the decision to drop out. And I think there was like a 2 week period and then I was in the paralegal program. And within the first few weeks in the paralegal program, I was like, okay, I made the right decision. I'm now understanding like the basics of the legal system. And I'm now understanding, you know, kind of what I was learning at UBC. Now I'm getting more of a basis behind it. And I'm understanding, you know, that I need the foundation and now I'm going to get it. And that first semester, it just completely turned my mood and just made me so much more excited about my decision and really pushed me more into wanting to do immigration law, even though the whole program, there's only one class on immigration law. But yeah, I think that's how I kind of turned that really down point in my career, my educational journey into a positive one. And I'm so glad I did because now I have, you know, I'm in two professions and they really complement each other, which is good. One of the really positive things I would say in my career has now been able to take, I'm now able to take on placement students. So as a paralegal student, you need to complete your 120 hours to become licensed. And you have to do that placement under a licensed paralegal. So I have now taken on my second student, and I just really enjoy helping students figure out their career journey, because I know from experience that it can be hard to kind of make those pivots or decide on one area of law that you want to work on, one area of law that you want to work in. So I think that's been, you know, one of the, I would say, bigger accomplishments that I've been able to be a part of. I don't even know if that's like an accomplishment for myself, but I just enjoy helping students. And I've really lucked out with the two students that I've had. My first student is now a licensed paralegal, and the second student that I have wants to work in immigration law. So yeah, it's been really exciting. And, you know, though I'm not in school anymore, I'm kind of still a part of it, which I love. So it's been a really positive part of my career so far.
I totally agree. I was able to take on a student, not for a licensing requirement, but just this summer. And it was so rewarding being able to help someone and sort of talk them through what kind of career they're looking to have. And they also wanted a career in immigration. And it's definitely not something that is a clear-cut path like a traditional law firm. So it was really neat to get to support someone through that transition. One question I do have for you is if you could explain a bit more about the paralegal licensing process. Of course, we know about the lawyer licensing process and the fees associated and the time associated, but I would love to hear more what the process is like from the paralegal side.
Sure. Yeah. So as a paralegal, I'll start over. So to become a licensed paralegal, you have to complete an accredited college program. I'm not sure how many there are, but they're across Ontario. So as a licensed paralegal, you're licensed by the Law Society of Ontario, and it's really unique to our province. No other province has licensed paralegals. So the first step is to complete the accredited program, which is 2 years. You then have to complete 120 hours under a licensee. And then once you complete that, you can then write your licensing exam. The licensing exam is 7 hours, 1 day, 3.5 hours in the morning, 3.5 hours in the afternoon. And it covers everything from ethics, small claims, provincial offenses, like the whole paralegal scope of practice. Once you pass your exam, it's very similar to the process for lawyers. So you then have to have your ethics. You then have to fill out the paperwork in order to become licensed once you pass your exam. And you have to pay licensing fees like a lawyer as well. They are less than a lawyer, but you still have to pay annual licensing fees. And they're dependent on your scope. So 100% fees is for if you're providing legal services. And it kind of goes down from there. And then you also have to complete your annual report as well. You have to be insured, errors and omission insurance, and you have to complete CPDs as well. So once you pass that licensing exam, it is very similar to being a lawyer. We both have to do annual reports. We both have to do CPDs. We both have to have insurance. And then you're a licensed paralegal.
No, that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing, Rebecca, because I don't think all lawyers know about the licensing process and how it's just as rigorous. And I personally didn't know that Ontario was the only province that had licensed paralegals. So
they me say, neither.
Yeah, you learn something new every day. So this is the new thing I've learned today. Rebecca, one topic Erin and I have loved to talk about on the podcast, like love to hate talk about, but you know, love to talk about on the podcast and love to talk about in our lives is student debt. And so we know that Aaron and myself as lawyers, we incurred a lot of student debt to get that degree. And so we'd be really interested to learn about what your experience has been with financing your education and ongoing debt.
Yeah, I definitely have it. So there was no savings account for me when I first started school, you know, which is the situation for a lot of people. And so I have OSAP, which funded my college, university and college, and then college education. So I racked up a bit of debt. And the way that I manage it, you know, there's a couple parts to it because it can become overwhelming if you let it. And I think one way of mentally managing it is just staying on top of how much do I owe? What are my monthly payments? And personally for me, if I get a bonus or you know, a larger tax return than I thought I would have, I put that on my loan. And so I've been paying off my student loans since 2018. But I'm still trying to live my life and I don't want to, be that person that lets it rule my life. So I still travel. I still go out for dinner, but I do make sure that I'm making more than my minimum monthly payment. And, something I actually found out really recently was that in 2021, kind of doing my annual review, 2021 was my first year of being self-employed. And I've been able to pay off 25% of my total student loan within 1 year. And I think that might have to do with, you know, the lockdowns and not being able to travel or go to restaurants, but I really focused in on it. Also being self-employed, I'm really into bookkeeping now and staying on top of the numbers. And so I focused more on my debt this year. And so I think there's, you know, a healthy balance of paying it off as quickly as possible, but also not letting it rule your world and not being able to live your life, because it takes time to pay off student loans and you don't want to put pause on your, you know, social life or living your life because of the student loan. So I find it's a healthy balance that I feel like I'm doing okay at.
Yeah, I think that's something that we both continue to struggle with. Some days are better than others. but it's always nice to hear that we're not alone, but wish that you didn't have to incur student debt as well. Mm-hmm. So one question we have for you is, what would you like to see change in the legal profession?
Yeah, so I would say... one thing I think that would help the legal profession is increasing the credibility and exposure of paralegals and immigration consultants. And kind of going back to what I was saying earlier about how there's this gap that people feel like they can only choose having a lawyer help them or self-representing themselves. And I feel like filling in that gap, however which way we do it, is the way that we get access to justice and is the way that we improve the legal system. And I don't think anyone should feel like, oh, I don't have enough money, therefore I have to self-represent. Like, there are so many options out there to help individuals who financially can't afford it. If you need to hire a lawyer, like, there is legal aid. Sometimes you don't need a lawyer. Small claims under $35,000, you can hire a paralegal to handle it instead of a lawyer. And so I feel like increasing exposure and the credibility of immigration consultants and paralegals is really something that I think needs to change in the legal profession. And I think over time, it will get better and better.
I couldn't agree more. And I really hope that this podcast episode and our conversation today helps contribute in a small way to just that, because I know that Aaron and I have learned a lot just from speaking with you. And I really hope that this helps, you know, bridge that gap. And I think that so much of the work you're doing is so important to kind of bridging that gap and breaking down those barriers. And I am so excited to see your career continue to evolve because, I mean, it's great so far. And so I know it's only going to get better. Rebecca, we love to end each episode asking our guests the same question. And we're just curious to learn, what is something new that you've learned recently, whether that be in work or in your daily life or just something fun?
Sure. Yeah. I recently went down south and I learned that you are not supposed to swim in the ocean at night. I live on a lake in Ontario and I'm very comfortable with the water. Swimming at night is not a big deal. And I went down south and I just continued doing that. I'm like, oh, it's so great. There's nobody around. This is just awesome that we have the whole beach to ourselves. and we learned from another traveler that you are not supposed to do that. The animals come out at night. That's when they feed. It's super dangerous. so luckily we didn't learn that the hard way. We only went swimming just a couple nights and then stopped. But that is, we'll call it a close call, but that is something that I learned recently that I think is a valuable lesson to learn.
Yes. Bless the, other traveler that warned you about that. That's very nice. I personally enjoy lake swimming more than I enjoy swimming in the ocean. And I don't know if that's just because you grew up with the lake and you're a bit more comfortable with what lives in there, but the ocean is the next, I don't know. I don't know what's in there.
Also, ocean swimming just reminds you of every single paper cut you didn't know you had.
Oh my God. Yes.
And that in and of itself makes me choose a lake over.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't realize, like how sticky it left you feeling. Like swimming in a lake, you feel so refreshed, but swimming in an ocean, you get out and you're like, oh, I have to shower. So
you need to shower. Yeah.
We're learning.
No kidding. Rebecca, thank you so much for educating us and for spending time with us today and for sharing your energy with us through this conversation. It's been so nice getting to know you, and you just have like the most lovely, enthusiastic presence. So to stay up to date with the podcast, you can follow us on Instagram @OffTheTracksPodcast and stay tuned for our next episode coming soon.